In light of updated national drinking water standards in mid-April from the Environmental Protection Agency, which set new targets for PFAS chemicals, which have been linked to higher risks of cancer and developmental damage for small children, we wanted to examine what else state regulators could be doing to reduce New Yorkers' risk of exposure to these so-called forever chemicals. To consider those questions, we're joined by Kate Donovan, the Natural Resource Defense Council's Northeast Director for Environmental Health. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here.
Well, for starters, how big of a deal are the finalized regulations from the EPA?
It's a big deal. The EPA hasn't regulated PFAS in a very, very long time in terms of, actually, this is the first time they've regulated PFAS in water. And in addition to that, they're the most stringent standards that we've seen.
From reading a little bit about this, did the drinking water that is regulated by these latest targets from the EPA become more dangerous overnight, or was there just sort of a change of opinion by federal regulators about what represented unhealthy levels?
Well, the research into the impacts of PFAS on our water has been happening for decades, and states have been moving to, create very stringent water quality standards. And New York had been pushing for much lower standards, even though New York had settled on 10. So it was a combination, I believe, of just the literature and all of the research that's being done that's linking PFAS to lots of detrimental health impacts, as well as lots of advocacy at state levels pushing for the strictest standards.
Yeah, for years now, we've had a state-based level addressing maximum contaminant levels for our drinking water. So, has the federal government essentially leapfrogged where we are, or are they catching up to where we are when it comes to PFAS in our drinking water?
Well, I mean, they've effectively made a more stringent standard. So New York had set levels at 10 parts per trillion, and now the federal government is down to 4, which is amazing. But that has some implications for New York State and how our public water systems will be addressed. So currently, about 50% of New York water systems have detected some level of PFAS contamination, and about 250 systems have exceeded the current state's POFA and POFS drinking water standards. And that's something the state has been working on, over the last couple of years. But Department of Health does estimate that now with these new released standards from EPA, that number of impacted water systems with dangerous levels of PFAS is expected to double. So we're expecting to find about 550 systems in New York State that will exceed the federal levels.
In those cases where water systems are exceeding the federal levels, what's the correct course of action in the short term and the long term?
Right. I mean, so the state really and these public water systems face billions of dollars of investments to install the necessary treatment infrastructure that's needed, as well as millions of dollars in operating and maintenance costs that will be needed to keep these systems. So, in the short term, public water systems will have to start filtering out this level of PFAS. And I would say in the medium term, not even in the long term, we need to stop producing PFAS, right? We need to stop frustrating the problem. And that's, I think, where New York can make some real immediate actions, take some real immediate actions this session by stopping the use and production of PFAS in certain products.
Yeah, I want to get to that, but one last question on the drinking water front. Does the finalization of the federal drinking water standards come with any additional federal dollars for states like New York to address the water systems that are now exceeding the PFAS contamination levels? Or is this all going to fall to states like New York to address these problems and comply with what the federal government thinks are the safe standards?
Well, I know there are some federal dollars that relate directly to drinking water infrastructure, right? And I don't know the specifics of what those numbers of federal dollars would be in the state budget. Advocates have been fighting for keeping that level of state funding at the 500 million mark because we have all these needs to help municipalities and local water systems adjust to these new standards.
Well, as you mentioned earlier, PFAS exposure is not limited to drinking water, and then there are ways for people to be exposed through everyday products, and those products can then trickle down into the drinking water. And to address that, there are a variety of bills dealing with where PFAS would be prohibited. I want to start with one from Assemblymember Zebrowski and Senator Hoylman Siegel. What are the range of products that they're looking to address where there's an expectation that PFAS might be in them right now?
Yeah, and this is a really great piece of legislation because it starts to get at these non-essential uses of PFAS. And when I say non-essential use, we're not talking about banning any products, right? We're not saying that dental floss will no longer be available or certain cleaning products. We're just talking about the fact that PFAS is used in that product. And it may not be critical for the product to function, or there may be a safer alternative on the market that can be used to have the same kind of function in the product. So the Zebrowski-Hoylman-Siegel bill addresses things like dental floss, cleaning products, nonstick cookware, rugs, stain-resistant treatments that are often made to furniture, ski wax. But these is really just getting at a class that we know these products can use PFAS. They're non-essential, and there are safer alternatives that exist on the market for all of the products that have been identified.
And is there reason to believe that the utilization of PFAS in these products at the level of which PFAS is being used is a risk to public health and safety? Or are we just taking a sort of safety measure and being overly cautious with the idea that any PFAS is a problem?
Yeah, I would say it's twofold. So first of all, there are some risks of exposure to the actual PFAS in the product in your home. So like dental floss is a great example. Dental floss has been tested by third parties on the level of PFAS and has had, I think, one of the tests showed that some of the dental floss we've seen on the market has over 250,000 parts per, million use of PFAS, right? That is a very, very, very high level of PFAS to be found in a product. And when you're sliding it through your teeth daily, that would be concerning to me. Nonstick cookware, of course, people use nonstick cookware to the point where things are chipping, right, or very old. That becomes a risk because the PFAS can, and the different types of coatings can enter your food, as well as cleaning products, right, through inhalation. But what is more is that a lot of these products end up in the landfills, right, into your trash, which either are disposed of through, or either incinerated or put into a landfill. We have lots of issues with landfill leachate, which is kind of the landfill juice, if you will, that seeps out of the landfill that is very highly contaminated with PFAS. And that's a result of carpets and textiles and cleaning products and cookware being disposed of in landfills. In addition to that, products that have PFAS, like cleaning products, a lot of automotive type of cleaning waxes and things may be disposed of down the sinks, right, and end up into our water supply. So it's not only just problematic for exposure in our homes for human health, but also these PFAS and products end up into our environment through disposal.
Well, moving to other legislation, you're also targeting PFAS as well as other toxic ingredients that can be found in personal care and cosmetic products. What are some of the items in which PFAS is showing up that people might use as part of their, say, daily routine, like putting on mascara?
Yeah, I mean, mascara is a very common one. I mean, any product that you buy that has the selling point of non-stick or stain resistant or waterproof, it's usually a pretty good indication that PFAS is probably being used in that product to achieve that function in the product. The personal care and cosmetic bill covers a range of toxic of chemicals that are not currently banned in the products that we see on the shelves in the United States. And many of these chemicals are banned in the EU, right? L'Oreal might be selling the same shampoo in the US and in Europe and just using a different formulation. So this bill also covers things like formaldehyde, heavy metals, and other toxics that we really don't need to be putting on our bodies every single day.
Is there an expectation that there are safer formulations for all the products that we might use right now that contain PFAS, or is there an assumption that some products just would have to come off the shelves because they are so reliant on PFAS or other toxic chemicals to have, say, that waterproof or other unique quality?
There are alternatives to the use of PFAS in all these products. You can get mascaras and other things. Companies may need to reformulate, but we've seen them do this time and time again, right? And we know that it's possible. We know that these products exist in the European Union without a number of toxic chemicals. So we just need to kind of level the playing field here in New York and start to require manufacturers to use better products that are not putting our health at risk.
Well, lastly, on this theme, there's legislation addressing the use of PFAS in feminine hygiene products, such as tampons, liners, period underwear, etc. I was a little surprised to learn that that was even an issue, considering how this is probably a sensitive nature where exposure is probably greater and more problematic.
Yeah, it's very concerning that toxic chemicals are even in these type of products to begin with. You know, PFAS in particular has been found, and there was a big, it's been in the news very frequently about period type of underwear, and also sports clothing and sports bras and athletic pants, because of the PFAS being in the actual materials that these products are made out of. So, you know, we think that there's no space, there should be no place for PFAS in any of these products. And manufacturers and producers of these products have a duty to make sure their products are safe.
And finally, when you think about the bills we've just been talking about, are these things that, if enacted into law, would result in an immediate change in what's on shelves? Or does there need to be some sort of grace period for transition?
The legislation does allow for a year or two for transition, of course. But what we've seen, I mean, New York is not new to this, right? We've banned PFAS in paper-based packaging. We've banned PFAS in firefighting foam. We've banned PFAS in apparel. So New York has had a trend of banning PFAS in certain products and has understood the importance of that in terms of our health, but also in terms of our water systems. Last session, we did not see any movement on PFAS. And so that's why this session, advocates and impacted communities, we have doctors and public utilities too, are coming in, you know, are really advocating for the fact that we need to start addressing more products. We need to start limiting how PFAS gets into our environment and into our homes. You know, New York certainly has the will to address this, and we're hopeful that they will do so this session.
Well, we've been speaking with Kate Donovan. They're the Natural Resource Defense Council's Northeast Director for Environmental Health. Kate, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Dave.
For Capital Pressroom content, visit capitalpressroom.org or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.